When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Flushing is Burning. As always, I'm Grace. This week was a lot of news. The first act is really just going to be Mets and baseball, because talk about in either side to be able to make two separate segments. The first thing, again, this is how slow it is. Corey Kluber retired. Two-time Cy Young Award winner, three-time All-Star, 34 career BWAR, 3.44 career ERA. Very nice pitcher. Had some ups, had some downs. He got a no-hitter with the Yankees. You know, just a solid player. Probably doesn't get into the Hall of Fame, but I could see him sticking around like a Mark Burley, making a few ballots, or he could Johan fell off after the first year, which is so sad to think about. But yeah, very, very nice career. You know, it's interesting because he won those Cy Youngs right before DeGrom did, and we're sort of getting to the point where that era is starting to phase out a bit. You know, like Max Scherzer won Cy Young's right around there, and he's in one of the last years of his career, assuming DeGrom's hurt, might come back at the end of this year, but no one knows what he's going to look like. Kluber's retired, you know. Blake Snell's still around, but that's like it, you know, like it's weird. Hyunjin Ryu isn't who he used to be. It's odd. It's like a phase of sports, of baseball history that's almost transitory to bridge us to the par excellence of Shohei Ohtani and Spencer Strider and Kodai Senga. Fingers crossed he continues to improve this year. But yeah, just one of those like good, he's going to be a big remembering guy, you know, like you're gonna sit there and be like, wow, he really did win two Cy Youngs, huh? And I think that's cool. I think worse ways to be remembered than as a remember some guys guy, but like a top line remember some guys, you know, like not like a nitty gritty one, but one that starts off the conversation. Hey, you remember Corey Kluber? Wasn't he great? That's pretty cool. The big news this week for the Mets was Billy Epler has been put on the ineligible list through the end of this year's World Series, 2024 World Series, after the conclusion of the investigation into his, trying to think of the word to use here, misuse of the injured list. So he not only manipulated injury, you know, injury reports and players and use the injured list incorrectly to benefit the team. But he also, and this one's bizarre to me, this is some classic, like Will Pond era, like, we didn't have to go this hard to do this, right? Like, every team lies about this. You didn't have to go to the point of, like, he falsified documents which is hilarious. Like, to me, I think that's so funny. I mean, it sucks because, like, if you think about it, like, yeah, we had the Tommy Hunter has a bad back joke for however many years that was going on with the Mets, but Tim LeCastro was put on the injury list so they could call up Brett Beatty. And when he went for his rehab, he genuinely injured himself for most of the year. An injury that did not need to happen, right? Because it was kind of like a freak injury. You know, it's not like one of these injuries that can, like, be built up over time. It's like a freak injury that, who knows? Had he not done that, maybe he would have been fine for his career or, you know, the rest of the year, whatever. But, yeah, it's just so fucking weird. And, like, really classic, like, Metsy, you know, like, falsifying documents to do something that every other team does to, like, go so hard at it. The league was like, we gotta stop this. You're going too hard. And I think it was Dave Capobianco on Twitter who pointed out that the Sandy Alderson made three major front office hirings, like big name, top line front office hirings in his time with the Mets. One was, and I have to double check who this is because I don't remember his name. I've done a very good job of blocking him out of my mind. Jared Porter, noted sex pest. That was numero uno. Then you had Zach Scott, who had to leave the team at a certain point because he was drinking and driving. And now Billy Epler, who has falsified documents. And it's one of those things that's like, it's funny. Like, let's not kid ourselves. This is objectively, like, hilarious that this happened this way. Right? Because I think everyone went into this and was like, you know, why are we punishing the Mets for something everyone does? And it turns out that the reason was because the Mets did way too much. But, like, also, the Mets gotta cut out this amateur hour bullshit, right? And, like, hopefully with David Stearns in charge, the tide will change. Although, how many times have we said that over the past? Hopefully with this person in charge. Hopefully with Steve Cohen buying the team. Blah, 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 blah. And, like, it does feel like there's a little Metsiness that, like, just has to stay, right? Or they're not gonna be the same team. I do want to point out that the Mets statement on this was so funny. Where it was basically like, damn, we don't care. It sounds like a you problem, you know? Like, and I think that's, again, hilarious. Let's see. I'm opening up the ESPN article now to try and get this statement. The Mets have been informed of the conclusion of Major League Baseball's investigation. With Billy Epler's resignation on October 5th, 2023, with David Stearns leading the baseball operations team, the Mets consider the matter closed and will have no further comments. That was literally like a, damn, man, that sucks for you. I'm not involved, but I hope you're okay. Yeah, this whole situation, we finally got a period on the end of that. Yeah, it's such a slow week. That's really it. I mean, they signed Ben Gamel to a minor league contract with an NRI to spring training. I guess I'll use this time because I got a lot of time to kill here. This is probably gonna be a shorter episode. But me and my dad went to a game a few years ago, probably 2021, I think, when he was with the Pirates. And we're Met Pirate game, and there's a guy in our section, and he is so drunk. And we're in the outfield. We're in field level outfield. The guy is so drunk. And he is leaning over the thing. And it's like a May or whatever. Like, it was like a lazy game between two teams. Like, Pirates sucked ass. The Mets weren't doing too hot at the time. Whatever time of year it was. This guy's leaning over the thing. And Ben Gamel was playing in, I think we were in left field. So he's playing in left field. The guy is just screaming at him and won't stop to the point that, like, everyone in the section was kind of like, what the fuck is this guy doing? And it's literally Ben Gamel. Like, it's not like, you know, this was 2021. We went to a Blue Jays game that year and George Springer was there and there were a bunch of people there and they were booing George Springer. You know, like, that at least is, like, sensical because of everything that happened with the Astros and there was no crowds in 2020. So, like, that made sense. This is literally just some guy. Like, this is literally just Ben Gamel. And it got so bad that I think Ben Gamble must have said something to someone, or someone said something to someone, because we were in the back of the section, we were in like the accessible seats, and you could see like someone come over to talk to the security guard, not like the security supervisor, but like someone come over to talk to the security guard and basically like, can you tell him to stop? So someone must have been like, this guy is going way too crazy. It was so funny, but that's all I think about when I see Ben Gamble, and I hope that guy doesn't sit in the outfield if Ben Gamble finds his way to the major league team this year. Finally, last little bit I wanted to get to is we've been seeing the press tour attempted redemption arc, I guess, of Trevor Power, who's basically out here begging for a job, which is, like, this is some down bad, seriously, like, unemployed man behavior. But he's like, I will play for the veteran minimum. That's what you gotta pay me, because I'm making all this money anyway. And, you know, I just want to come pitch. You know, a team that needs a good pitcher, they could just sign me. He's going on, like, Fox and stuff like that, like, begging for a job. He was on the Theo Von podcast, which, like, that man, both of them, and one of them for very obvious reasons, but, like, I've never gotten great vibes from Theo Von. That made me very suspicious, because he's just sitting there, he's like, I want to see you be win a Cy Young again, and I was like, okay, Theo, let's chillax. This guy has literally been subject to several sexual assault allegations. We really don't need to see him win another Cy Young. But yeah, it's so funny, because he's so desperate, and he wants to be back so bad, but no one wants him, right? Because, like, even the bad teams, like, all they have to pay him is a veteran's minimum, right? So, like, I'm trying to think of a really bad team. The Oakland A's, right? They would be the perfect amount of terrible and craven enough to want to do this. They could go to him and be like, here's a league minimum contract. And, like, of course he would sign it, because no one else wants him. But literally not even the bad teams want him. No one wants him. And you know he's, like, that really gets to him, right? Because, like, he's a narcissist and he believes himself. So he probably thinks himself to be completely, you know, targeted in this whole thing. And it's so funny. Like, you see him doing this, I'm like, oh, man, I love this. I want to watch it forever. I want to see you be miserable forever. But, yeah, I'm really enjoying the Trevor Bauer, you know, showing his whole ass at all times, begging for jobs. It's great. It's great entertainment. And that's really it for the week. There's not a lot that happened. So why don't we take a break? And when we come back, I'm going to get into a little bit of Grammy talk, because I feel like there's a lot there for us to mine into. Yeah. All right. And we're back. So the Grammys happened. I'm recording this on the 13th. I took a week off. I was just in the middle of a million things. But last Sunday, the 4th, was the Grammys. And I want to talk about some of the stuff there, because, again, we're in, like, the dregs of the offseason. We've got no big signings. I forgot to mention Jorge Soler signed today with the Giants, or yesterday. But, again, like, that's where we are right now. That felt like it was big enough culturally to do something about. And I want to get this out of the way first. The Grammys do not matter. Like, personally, I think they are. And, you know, like, I'll get excited when people are like, win, and I'll get into that in a little bit. But, like, generally, when I see them do stupid shit, my only response is usually like, yeah, that tracks for the Grammys, you know, like, I'm trying to think, Beck winning best album, you know, album of the year over Beyonce, like, yeah, that tracks, because that's exactly what they would do, right? So, this is also an extremely corrupt organization, which is something that came out right before the pandemic, and the pandemic happened, we all sort of forgot about it, but they're so corrupt. And they have this very strong history of, like, completely, like, refusing to acknowledge women and Black artists, which we saw this year. And there's so many awards, right? There's 90-something awards. I think it's like 94 awards or something crazy like that. A, they televise like 10 of them, right? They want to get all the performances in. So only like 10 of them make it to like the main show, right? And it's always, like, weird, too, because it's, like, the four big awards. They got to get the four big awards in there. But then the other six are just, like, an odd mishmash of whatever they think is going to be a big story, you know? So, like, certain years you'll get this award, other years you'll get this award. Like, imagine if the Oscars just randomly were, like, okay, so we've got 24 awards. And this year we're only going to show 20 of them. Each year now we're only going to show 20 of them. But the four that we cut out are going to change every year, you know? It would just be weird. You'd be like, why are we doing this? But they're so inaccurate. They have so many awards. They should be able to get a good percentage of them right. And yet they can't. They fail so many times. And what I've said to people about this before is that I don't think the Oscars always get it right either. But I think the Oscars try. Right? Like, even in years where you don't agree with Best Picture or Best Actor, Best Actress, whatever, there are other good wins, and on the whole, you go, okay, that makes sense, you know? Like, I'm trying to think of a year where I didn't think Coda deserved to win Best Picture, right? But on the whole that year, like, of course, like, Troy Kotsur winning Best Supporting Actor, yeah, let's go. Ariana DeBose winning Best Supporting Actress, yeah, let's go. I wouldn't have personally picked Jessica Chastain, but I was fine with that win. Like, they get things right, and even if they don't get them right, they get them good to the point that you're like, yeah, I'm solid with like 85% of the show, and that's really all you can ask for, you know. But the Grammys are like failing. Like, they're not even at a D. They're like, if they get 40% of the awards right, I think that would be a lot. Like, it's crazy. Anyway, the big news of the night was the controversy surrounding the album of the year. Me and my friend Jared, we were watching at the same time. We're texting each other, and I had texted him multiple times over the days before. Not the days before, but like multiple times since they announced the nominations through to like 5 minutes to like when they announced the award, right? Like, they were doing album of the year. I texted him, I was like, what if Taylor Swift wins? Now, I'm going to put this out here before we get into this. I'm a 26-year-old white girl. Of course, there are quite a few Taylor Swift songs that I really enjoy, you know? Red is an album I think is really spectacular. I think 1989 is her best album. I haven't listened to a ton of her latest stuff, although I did listen to Midnights because I saw all the people freaking out about it. I personally prefer Carly Rae Jepsen. And after The Loneliest Time came out, which I thought was a superb album, I personally would have nominated it for Album of the Year, but they seem to not want to recognize the artistry of Miss Carly Rae Jepsen, so we're not even going to get into that. But I listened to Midnights. I thought it was really cool that the album described how good it was in the title. If you didn't get that, it's Midnights. But yeah, I generally, like, there's a lot of her stuff I enjoy. I didn't think this was even close to being Album of the Year material. And it's really funny to me because, again, the Oscars, they have some records, and they don't enjoy having those records broken or tied often, right? So Katharine Hepburn has 4 acting Oscars. No one has gotten more than 3 other than her. John Ford has 4 director Oscars. I think no one else has gotten more than 2. Maybe one person has 3, but like, again, they are very, very like, we do not let you touch these records unless we think that you are at that level. The Grammys seem to operate to me more like the Golden Globes. They want to get the famous people on stage. They want to get them in front of the camera, and they want to have a moment. And in that way, Taylor Swift makes perfect sense. But in an art, in a category where you have, and personally, I thought that the two best nominees of the year in that category, like most, like many people did, were SZA and Boy Genius. I'm sure not a controversial take by any means. But yeah, there was a lot of stuff in that category that felt very nice, that I was very excited got in there. And I think that there's an issue here that we're not recognizing, right? Because I think that the reaction from people who don't agree with Taylor Swift's very mild politics, because let's be real, she doesn't actually stand up for pretty much anything that doesn't directly affect her. But the people who have issues with her very mild politics, that is ridiculous. You know, like, whatever. We can like or dislike someone's music based on more than just how they, because it's especially someone like her. It's not like she's writing protest songs. But I think we need to get to the point where A, we realize that celebrity burnout is real. Okay, because this is a real phenomenon. Like, I don't think you can discount that if you see too much of someone, you are going to get annoyed at them. And that's true in real life, too, with very few exceptions. You know, I need a lot of alone time. So when I'm doing stuff and all of a sudden I have to see the same singular celebrity over and over again, and the thing is that you can argue, well, blah, 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 she is. Let's not act like she isn't. She's everywhere. Okay, maybe it's me, but I also have a very high tolerance for this sort of thing where, like, I don't give a shit about most of this stuff because I am able to tune it out, but she has just gotten to the point where she's everywhere. And the thing is not even that she's just everywhere. It's that because she's everywhere, because she has so many fans, because the Eras Tour sold so many tickets, because the movie made so much money, these websites, these news sources realize that they can use her name to get more clicks, so they're going to write more about her. It's a snake eating its own tail at a certain point. And so, I think there's one celebrity that I've seen who's actually recognized that celebrity burnout is real, and it's Margot Robbie, which is really funny to me, because I don't actually think she was in danger of the celebrity burnout, but she said, you know, I kind of want to go away, I don't want people to get sick of seeing me. Yeah, that happens. It's a real thing, and I think that when you get to that point, it's kind of hard to get back from it. For a while, at least. I loved, you know, again, I'm a white person in America. I loved Hamilton. And Lin-Manuel Miranda started showing up everywhere. And I was like, all right, buddy, like, we gotta chill out on this. And I think also what's really annoying is, like, because the response from people on the right against Taylor Swift has been so intense, and they have been misogynistic and at times, but any criticism now, and there were valid criticisms of Taylor Swift, I don't want to act like there's not, you know, and I think that to act like there's not is to act as though there are people who are above criticism. To act like this is misogynistic to say is really ridiculous to me, because she's a person and we shouldn't have to tiptoe around her because she's a billionaire and because she's famous and because one time, you know, 15 years ago, Kanye West was mean to her. Yeah, Kanye West acted like a jackass. What else is now? You know, and it was 15 years ago. You know, the if you even want to say that the Kanye West stuff with that music video or whatever, that was like 10 years ago. You know, this is not recent stuff. And I'm going to sound like a broken record here if you've seen what people have been saying, but she gets up in her plane and just flies to fly, you know? And that's the real issue here, is that you can't even say that without it being, well, you just want to tear her down. No, I would like for our earth to be livable, I'd like for the air to be breathable, you know? And when people like her, and it's not just her, people like her, Travis Scott, Beyonce and Jay-Z, you know, Steven Spielberg. I'm not going to put Steven Spielberg up on a pedestal here, even though I think he's one of the greatest filmmakers of all time. and I will never burn out on anything he does. I also think no one needs a fucking private jet. Just fly first class, right? It's just, it's so ridiculous to me that, like, her fandom has become almost a cult. And I think what's happening here is we're going to reach a point where there is going to be breaking point. I think we're starting to see that because I've seen more and more criticism of her from all sides. I think that the breaking point this time is going to be very real in a way that it never was before, right? Because the Kanye thing was, you know, both Kanye things, but the last Kanye thing with the music video and everything like that, she ran away and hid after that. But nothing really happened to her. Because there was nothing for her to control in that situation. This time, this is in her control. A lot of the criticism is in her control. I also think she's going to be helped by the fact that NFL's over. Although, I'm sure that every time her and Travis Kelce get on a plane, it'll be documented. But, like, I think that the fact that she's not going to be on TV once a week, yelling from the box or whatever, I think that will help. But, yeah, it's just, it's we've reached a point where, like, I think we're too smart for this level of celebrity worship. So I think we're going to have to come back down to earth now. What I did love was that Boy Genius won 3 Grammy Awards, and Phoebe Bridgers was actually the big winner of the night because she picked up another award for her collaboration with SZA, which gave her 4 awards, and that's terrific. I love Boy Genius. I love them together. I also love them separately. Obviously, if you haven't listened to, I feel like Phoebe Bridgers' albums have made the most mainstream crossover. But if you haven't listened to her work, or if you haven't listened to Julian Baker's work or Lucy Dacus' work, I'm particularly fond of Julian Baker. I totally recommend them. There's a lot of material there to parse through. Yeah, it's great. Super, super excited about that. They had some really good performances, too, on the show. I'm not going to be the first person to say this, but Tracy Chapman with Luke Combs. I don't like the cover that he did, just because I think it's, like, so, I don't think every cover needs to reinvent the wheel, but his is just, like, because hers is so filled with a specific type of emotion, and his is just, like, devoid of that. He's just covering a song he likes, and she's, you know. But the way that he looked at her during that performance, just, like, filled with awe, and the way that, you know, she started to play, and as people in the you know, theater realized who it was, started to cheer for her, and she, you could see it really meant something to her. That was magical, such a magical way. Dua Lipa's performance to open the show. I'm, like, a huge Dua Lipa fan. I'm very excited for this new album. The new music sounds great. And she's, like, a top tier performer. Like, we need to acknowledge Dua Lipa should be our world's biggest pop star, because she also just seems so cool, you know? Like, she just seems like the world's coolest person. I love Dua Lipa. The Joni Mitchell performance was, both sides now, had me sobbing like a little baby. That's just such a great song. It's so nice to see them give Joni Mitchell and Tracy Chapman their flowers. Because it seems like everyone we want to celebrate seems to go too soon. Billie Eilish's performance of What Was I Made For, obviously fantastic. She has such a voice, you know, and it's really great. I think what I love so much about her music is that she uses the affectations to her advantage, because at a certain point she lets go of them, the curtain drops, and you hear the full voice there, and it's magic. And I think that's, she's sort of created this new group niche of her specific type of pop, where it's like that voice, but no one else has really figured out that you need to lose the voice at a certain point during the song, and like, oh, okay, now we've got it. So it's just great. Her performance also, I want to shout out her performance on SNL from a few months ago, where she did that song, and she did Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. One of the best renditions I've ever heard of Have Yourself a Merry Little Christmas. Like, I want her to record it, because it's fantastic. But her performance of What Was I Made For on the show, where that she had the photos of all of the I don't want to say female cast members of SNL because that erases Molly Kearney and the fact that they're non-binary. So all the non-male members of the SNL cast provided baby pictures and videos from when they were younger and stuff, and it's such a beautiful performance. It's just a great song. I saw some people being like, this is not a good song, and I was like, all right, relax. Hater culture has gone too far, because that is objectively a good song. And the In Memoriam, specifically the bit with Annie Lennox doing Nothing Compares to You, I had forgotten, because so much has happened lately. I had forgotten that Sinead O'Connor, like, I knew Sinead O'Connor died, and obviously, but I'd forgotten that it was this year. So when it started to play, it kind of took me by surprise, and I started weeping. And the bit at the end, calling for the ceasefire, absolutely, 100% what Sinead would have done. Only thing Sinead wouldn't have done would be to lightly backtrack the day after. Sinead would have went full bore into that. She would have been like, you fucking idiots. Yeah, I meant what I said. Like, that's what's great about her. And then Fantasia Barrino's tribute to Tina Turner. I was a little scared when Miley was performing and she started doing like the Proud Mary bit. And I was like, oh God, are they going to consider this the tribute to Tina Turner? Because I can't do this if it is. And luckily it wasn't. Fantasia. It's one of those things where it's like, I don't know that she was the absolute perfect person to do it, but the performance was perfect. So I'm fine with it. And I'd love to see the Grammys sort of embrace music history because I'm an Oscar fan. And I will admit that one of the things I don't like that they do is that they seem to have forgotten that they're about movie history as much as they're about the current movies. They're about preserving film history and celebrating it. And I think that there are so many great ways that they could do it, that they could take a page out of the Grammys book. I can't believe I'm saying that. And celebrate what came before, you know? They just need to... I've been watching a lot of old Oscar telecasts, and I think that what they need to do is, A, cut so many bits from the middle of the show, and B, let the monologue be trimmed by, 3 minutes. This will open up a lot of time for them. They're also going earlier this year, which is great. But I think that they could take a page out of the Grammys book, use extra time, or whatever. This year they're going on an hour early, so maybe they'll have extra time somewhere. And celebrate film history. Because there's 100-plus years of this, right? Like, the Oscars themselves, this is their 96th award ceremony. The Oscars themselves are so storied. You could do Oscar history, and you've got The Godfather, you've got Casablanca, you've got Lawrence of Arabia, you've got On the Waterfront, all these great movies that are a part of your history. Why are we not embracing them? I think that what the Oscars need to do, this is turning into an Oscars thing, and I didn't mean it to, but I think what the Oscars need to do, genuinely, they need to get an actor to host. I don't think they need a comedian. I think all these award shows think they need a comedian. I don't think they do. I think if you get an actor who's funny and you get a team of writers, you could probably cut the monologue by a lot because it's not a stand-up comedian. They're not going to want as much time. Get an actor who's funny. Here's my thing. Regina Hall would be perfect for this. And they had her host with Amy Schumer and Wanda Sykes, where she barely got anything to do. And I think that was the wrong thing, because I think she genuinely is the best person of that three to host. I think you need a funny actor who will be willing to come out, have cute little... You need to be funny and make fun of the movies a little bit. This is why Billy Crystal and Whoopi Goldberg were fantastic hosts, because they made fun of the movies, but they had the love of the movies. The closest they got to having that anytime soon was John Mulaney at the Governor's Award. If you haven't seen it, it's on YouTube. Look it up. It's 13 minutes long. It's John Mulaney at the Governor's Awards. And he's making so many great jokes, poking fun at the people that are there. But he's doing it with such a love and deep well of knowledge for the awards. And I also want to point out, now this is turning into me just talking about how much I love John Mulaney. John Mulaney and Nick Kroll hosted 2 years in a row the Film Independent Spirit Awards. If you can find the ones that they did in, I think it was the one in 2018, for the films that had come out in 2017. So this is right after the Me Too stuff had just started. John Mulaney makes a joke about Harvey Weinstein that is one of the funniest things I've ever heard. And it is so dark. But yeah, 100%. The Grammys are great at acknowledging the history. I forgot where I was going with all of that. Why don't we, before I get into another tangent, take a break. And when we come back, I'll do my movie minute. All right, and we're back. So, my movie minute. I went to the movies last week. Yeah. And I saw the new Ava DuVernay film, Origin. And I went in. I had seen the good stuff people had said about it. I had seen the bad stuff people had said about it. I personally am an Ava DuVernay fan. I've watched, I think, most of what she's made. Selma's one of my favorite movies of all time. I think When They See Us is tremendous. I even like A Wrinkle in Time. I think it's an interesting big swing that you don't see a lot in sort of that big blockbuster mold of filmmaking. Origin is so good. And what I liked about it is something that some people said they didn't like. I liked that it played with the form in a really big way. So it had, and also, I don't quite get this because there are people like, this is basically a documentary. And I'm like, not really. It's all reenactments. And you occasionally get like that documentary feel from it, but it's also surrealist. And it's also, biopic and a journalism story and everything like that. It does so much great stuff in terms of, and it weaves in multiple stories from multiple time periods into this one woman's story of researching this book. It's let me give you a description because I just realized I launched into everything I liked about this movie. It's Origin is based on Isabel Wilkerson's book, Cast, The Origins of Our Discontents. And it's a book all about how so much of the stuff that we consider systemic racism is actually based in classism. And it does this through talking about the caste system, the title of the book, the caste system in India and the Nazis in Germany and obviously racism in America. And it sort of finds a way, and a few other things, it finds a way to wind these all into each other and create this sort of very, I haven't read the book yet. I have it sitting here because I took it at a library. But the movie finds a way to weave all of these things into each other. And it shows you, it also takes on another layer that I don't know is quite a big part of the book. But it does seem like something that you would use as the device in the movie. In that the device in the movie is that it's about Isabel Wilkerson's story of writing the book. And through that illustrates the themes and the ideas from the book. And it's a really inventive way of telling this kind of story, you know. It's not often that you see a nonfiction book in that sense get adapted into a fictional narrative. I'm thinking a lot of Mean Girls, weird comparison, but that again was like an anthropological book that Tina Fey just turned into a story. But yeah, it's fascinating, and I want to give Anjanou Ellis-Taylor her flowers. She is brilliant. She's always been brilliant, but I wish... I talked about the Oscar nominees, and I talked about how I did not like that Origin got nominated, and I didn't like that Annette Bening got nominated, and all that. I wish Origin got in over Maestro to picture. And I think it'd be very close for me between Greta Lee and Anjanou Ellis-Taylor for that fifth actor slot in Best Actress. Because, quite frankly, now that I'm thinking about it, I'd bump Carey Mulligan. I'd get them both in there. But it's such a tough thing to have to depict, to have to be both the window into the film and the tour guide through it, and she's great. John Bernthal is great. A lot of different weird little, you know, like name actors just popping up in the various other storylines. I mean, Jasmine Cephas Jones from Hamilton and Blindspotting is in it. Victoria Pedretti, who was in one of the Mike Flanagan, Shirley Jackson things on Netflix, and she was in You, is in it. It's just, it's fascinating. And it's one of those things, it's like, you watch it, and it like opens you up. You know, you feel it sort of work its way into you. And I've seen a lot of people say, oh, this is homework. It's like watching homework. It's like homework, trying to watch this. And I will say, it does, there are times, Niecy Nash Betts is in this. She's great in it as well. It just came to my mind. My one complaint was that it did get a little preachy at times. And that's where, like, the documentary stuff kind of fails a little bit, because that works better in a documentary than in this kind of movie. But I have no idea how you think this film is homework, because I personally was riveted, glued to the screen. It was fascinating. And it felt so real. You know, and as someone who loves to watch movies and go, wow, how was that made? This was a big one for me, because it was like, oh, how did she do that? Wow, it was a lot of work. Wow, she did all that for that shot. Oh, wow. Like, I have such tremendous respect for Ava DuVernay as a filmmaker, because I think there are so few people that are willing to, in bigger budget movies, take such big swings. And I think that there are people who want to discredit her just because she's a, at times, corny Gen Xer. But she's also a fantastic filmmaker, and I hate to watch people just dismiss her because they don't like the way that she does certain things. I don't know. I recommend Origin. I recommend the entire breadth of Ava DuVernay's work. Selma, 13th, When They See Us, A Wrinkle in Time, even her older movies like Middle of Nowhere, and I'm completely forgetting what her first movie was called, but... let's see, Ava DuVernay. I Will Follow. Again, I've seen literally, I think, other than, like, her movies, I think I've seen, yeah, I've seen every single one of her films. She also executive produced The White Tiger, which is a really good movie. But yeah, she deserves more respect, and I wish that this movie had been more widely seen and more widely promoted. Yeah, just got a weird release. I hope her next picture gets a bigger release, because she deserves the accolades. She got Best Picture nomination for Selma, but it literally only got song other than that, which I thought was bananas. Didn't win for 13th. She probably should have. She lost to a TV show. They actually changed the rules after that. I was so pissed for her. She should have won that. But she didn't get in for director for Selma, and she didn't get in for this. And one of these days, I hope she gets a recognition. Anyway, thank you for listening. We ended up clocking in around the usual time. If you want to follow us online, the show is, I keep using like the royal we here. I'm never going to be able to get rid of that. The show is on Twitter at FIBpod. It's on Instagram at FI. Is it Flushing is Burning Pod? I'm usually so good at this. Don't, you know. Let's see. Instagram. Flushing is Burning Pod on Instagram. And if you want to follow, email us. FlushingIsBurning@gmail.com. If you enjoy the show, I assume you enjoy the rest of the shows on Home Run Applesauce's network. If you don't, I would recommend you listen to them, from Complex to Queens, Pod of Their Own, Today Your Love, Tomorrow the World Series, all great. Everything on this network is great. But if you enjoy all of these shows, I recommend that you subscribe to the Patreon. $5 a month. If you go to homerunapplesauce.com, there's a link. You click on it. It says Patreon. You click on it. Shoots you over to Patreon. Funny enough. $5 a month. You get access to our exclusive Discord server. You get exclusive podcast episodes. I believe they do playlists and stuff like that from time to time. Just a bunch of stuff. Yeah. Thank you for listening, and I will talk to you again next week.